All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Glory to Sri Guru coming on. Nama Vishnu Pada, Krishna Prasad, Vikram. Shimati Bhakti Vinanta Sama Dinami, Namaste, Sarasvati Devi, Gauranga, Vikram. Nivishesha Sundivadi Hasyata. Hare Krishna reading today from 1st Canto, Chapter 18. Entitled Maharaj Parikit, Cursed by a Brahmin Boy, we're on text 24-25. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Ekada dana udyamya.
Ekada dana udyamya.
Ekada dana udyamya.
Ekada dana udyamya.
Vicharam rigayam vane.
Vicharam rigayam vane.
Vicharam rigayam vane.
Vicharam rigayam vane.
Rigan anugata shranta.
Rigan anugata shranta.
Rigan anugata shranta.
Rigan anugata
Shudita Shrishto Shrishito Brisham.
Shudita Shrishito Brisham.
Shudita Shrishito Brisham.
Shudita Shrishito Brisham.
Jalashayam Achakshana.
Jalashayam Achakshana.
Prabhiveshatvam
Ashramam.
Tadarsha Munim Asinam.
Tadarsha Munim Asinam.
Shantam Milita Lochana.
Shantam Milita Lochana.
Ekada Dhanur Udyamya.
Ekada Dhanur Udyamya.
Vira Vicharan Rigayambane.
Vicharan Rigayambane.
Nirgan Anugata Shanta, Shanta, Shrita, 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 Vrishan, Jalashayam, Achakshana, Pravidesha, Tam Ashama, Dadarsha, Monim Asinam, Shantam, Milita, Lachanam. Following. Mrigayam, hunting excursion. Vane, in the forest. Mrigam, stags. Anugata, while following. Shranta, fatigue. Shudita, hungry. Trisha, being thirsty. Trisham, extremely. Jala Ashayam, reservoir of water. Achakshana, while searching for. Prabhivesha, entered into. Tam, that famous. Ashrama, hermitage of Samika Rishi. Dadarsha, saw. Munim, the sage. Asinam, seated. Santam, all silent. Milita, closed. Lochanam, eye. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Interestingly enough, it starts off with, once upon a time, Maharaj Parikit, while engaged in hunting in the forest with bow and arrows, became extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty while following the stags. While searching for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage of the well-known Shamika Rishi and saw the sage sitting silently with closed eyes. Omaginati Madam Dasya, Janandanas Lakaya, Chakti Uma Kamjana, Tasmai, Shigurudeya Maha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master very kindly forced open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I'm eternally indebted for that, and beg for service from him life after life. So Srila Prabhupada's purport is very interesting purport, full of so much there. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada said, the Supreme Lord is so kind to his pure devotees that in proper time he calls such devotees up to him and thus creates an auspicious circumstance for the devotees. Maharaj Parikit was a pure devotee of the Lord, and there was no reason for him to become extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty, because a devotee of the Lord never becomes perturbed by such bodily demands. But by the desire of the Lord, even such a devotee can become apparently fatigued and thirsty just to create a situation favorable for his renunciation of worldly activities. One has to give up all attachment for worldly relations before one is able to go back to Godhead. And thus, when a devotee is too much absorbed in worldly affairs, the Lord creates a situation to cause indifference. The Supreme Lord never forgets his pure devotee. The Supreme Lord never forgets his pure devotee, even though he may be engaged in so-called worldly affairs. Sometimes he creates an awkward situation, and the devotee becomes obliged to renounce all worldly affairs. The devotee can understand by the signal of the Lord, but others take it to be unfavorable and frustrating. The devotee can understand by the signal of the Lord, but others take it to be unfavorable and frustrating. Maharaj Parikit was to become the medium for the revelation of Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Sri Krishna, and his grandfather, Arjuna, was the medium for the Bhagavad Gita. Had Arjuna not been taken up with an illusion of family affection by the will of the Lord, the Bhagavad Gita would not have been spoken by the Lord himself for the good of all concerned. Similarly, had Maharaj Parikit not been fatigued, hungry, and thirsty at this time, Srimad Bhagavatam would not have been spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami, the prime authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a prelude to the circumstances under which Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken for the benefit of all concerned. The prelude therefore begins with the words, once upon a time. That's an amazing purport, isn't it? Like many other millions of amazing purports by Srila Prabhupada. He just puts everything in such a encouraging perspective for us. So I tried my best to read the purport without any interruptions, and thank you, Krishna, for letting me do that. Now I'm going to go through it line by line because there's so much there. So this phrase, ekada, once upon a time, in our Western culture, perhaps we're more familiar with once upon a time being the start of a fairy tale, right? Some fantastic, imaginatory story of kings and this and princes and frogs turning into people and so many things. But Srimad Bhagavatam, actually this Ekadat, actually Indraduna Maharaj, in his many Vrindavan lecture series that he's been giving for the last 2 years, he has one entitled Once Upon a Time. We spoke about that. And then one of the people in our reading groups did a little research and typed in Ekada, how many times it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, once upon a time. And there were many, many stories that start once upon a time. Now, putting it in perspective of the Bhagavatam's vision, like, for example, in mundane recorded history, it only goes back a few thousand years, you know. Don't worry, I'm not going to say how many thousands of years it goes back, because somebody will come up and say, well, actually, it goes back a little further. But anyway, it's a limited amount of time, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 years or whatever. There's some record, or a speculative record, you know, based on a few little pieces of information about things that happened 3,000 to 5,000 years ago. But Srimad Bhagavatam and Vedic literature in general, they go beyond millennia. They go beyond time. It's aparusheya. It's revealed knowledge that comes from beyond the universe. So when they're referring to once upon a time, it means once it happened, like it's a general introduction to a story. Oftentimes it's a general introduction to a story that happened millennia ago, you know, and we have that information given to us. So I just picked out a few instances where this Ekada is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So in the fourth canto, introducing the story of King Uttanapa, or the story of Dhruvamara, how he was climbing up on the lap of his father at the same time his brother Uttama was climbing up and got rejected, etc. So that story starts out Ekada. Once upon a time, you know, Maharaj King Uttanapa, was patting his son. That story starts out. Then in the third canto, when the four Kumaras are beginning their entrance into the Vaikuntha planets, that story, Brahma is explaining that story starts out with Ekada. Once upon a time, by their free will, the four Kumaras were traveling. Then again in the eighth canto, this King Satyavrata was performing austerities in the forest, and he was offering oblations with his hands cupped from the river water, and just a little teeny fish, just a little fish got in his palms. And that story starts off, Ekada. That's the beginning of the story of the Matsya incarnation. Also, 11th canto has the yogendras, the nine yogendras traveling through outer space. Once upon a time they were traveling, and then they came to the palace of King Nimi. Then Prithu Maharaj's story also his story is ending with Ekada. Once upon a time, when he saw that he was getting older, and then he divided up his kingdom, etc., and was ready to renounce his kingdom. And then another story in the seventh canto. And this is explaining about Narada Muni's previous life. Two lives previous, or whatever. Narada Muni, when he was the Gandharva Upaparna, so once upon a time there was a Sankirtan festival in the heavenly planets, and the Prajapatis invited the Gandharvas and the Charanas to come, and the Apsaras to come. And at that time, Upaparna, who was a very handsome wonderful singer, came along with some apsaras, and instead of glorifying the Lord and his holy name at the Sankirtan festival, he unfortunately started to sing some cinema songs and was not appreciated by the sages, who cursed him to take birth into suit. And then this whole soldier of being born as the maidservant's son began. Anyway, those are just a few mentions of the times in the Bhagavatam where it starts. Ekada, once upon a time. Referring to other planets, other millenniums, other bona fide recorded history of the Bhagavatam. So once upon a time, here in this story, when Maharaj Parikit goes out on a hunting excursion, he has this circumstance where after chasing the stags all morning, he gets hungry, thirsty, and fatigue. Now let's think a little bit about a Kshatriya's training, right? We're a little bit more familiar with like Arjuna's training to prepare for the battle of Kurukshetra. And no doubt Maharaj Parikit had similar strength of training as to become the world ruler. So Arjuna, he worked, or any of those soldiers in the battle of Kurukshetra, right? They're trained years and years and years and years to be expert at their whatever weaponry they were using. But what was that training? It was very gruesome, you could say. You know, the stamina that they had to exhibit to to fight all day on a chariot with bow and arrow or whatever their, you know, all the different soldiers had different types of weapons. But, you know, there was no breaks on the battlefield. Oh, excuse me, I need a drink of water. I mean, there was a couple of stories like that, but still, you know, sorry, I need to take a nap now. I'm really tired because I've been shooting arrows for an hour or two. No, they had to go all day long and under tremendous pressure. So now in this story, Maharaj Parikshit, he's, you know, on a horse chasing some animals around the forest. And for him to get so disturbed by sensual pushing of the senses, that's unprecedented. That's the point here. That and quickly pointed out that this was an arrangement of the Lord. This was an arrangement of the Lord so that he would do this, cross the proper procedure of etiquette, disrespect the sage, just with a simple dead snake. But still, it's obviously disrespectful. Obviously, you know, there's going to be a reaction for that. But the whole circumstance, Maharaj Parikshit's extreme hunger and fatigue to push him to be so disturbed, that was the arrangement of the Lord. And even the slight offense, granted it was an offense on Maharaj Parikshit's part to garland the sage who didn't respond to him in any way or acknowledge his presence, to garland him, that also was unprecedented, or, and we could say, arranged by the Lord. So what? So what would happen would be that extreme reaction by the son, who's a young, you know, just the circumstances, they're so perfectly arranged, you know. The young son, 12, so you can't really fault the young son. He's inexperienced. You can't really fault Chamakarishi because he's in meditation. And then you can't really fault Maharaj Parikshit because he's the great king and he was hungry and thirsty. But all of the circumstances combined together leads to the most glorious recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, which obviously is so beneficial for all the people of the world. We read today after Mangal Arti a little story, an excerpt from a story of Devananda Pandit. And I won't go into the story, but there was a circumstance where Lord Chaitanya was speaking of what was Devananda Pandit's offense was that he didn't understand that the whole point of that Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different than Krishna. Non-different than Krishna directly, and that every word in the Bhagavatam is meant to bring about devotion to Krishna. So it's such a glorious scripture, and the whole circumstance of how it was engineered by the Lord to come about is so amazing. Now, so we hear this philosophy, and it's, you know, about all these great souls that have their names and their stories and their characters are described in Srimad Bhagavatam. And then we go and we close the book and we walk in our life and our ordinary mundane trials and tribulations. And what is our lesson? Our lesson is to bring the lessons that we learn from the Srimad Bhagavatam and apply them in our life. So, what I'm trying to say is that when we have challenging circumstances in our life for whatever reason, financial, this one, emotional, whatever, relationship, whatever our challenging circumstances are, sometimes our first reaction is to think, why me? Or, you know, oh, it's too much, or I can't take it, or whatever. But here, in the middle of this purport, Srila Prabhupada saying how the pure devotee takes everything as the divine arrangement by the Lord. He takes all the good things as the divine arrangement of the Lord, and he takes all the trials and tribulations as the divine arrangement of the Lord. Perhaps it's easier to relate to the good things that happen to us and think, oh, how Krishna is so kind and I don't really deserve it, but he's so kind and merciful. But when the difficulties come, we have to apply ourselves a little more seriously to remember and pull out the philosophy so that we can remember and gain the lessons, the good lessons that are being presented to us. And as they say about lessons, life's lessons, they're easier to learn in hindsight by looking back after they're over. Oh, that anxiety I was going through, that test or that trial or trip, whatever, that now I can see that's why, that because it was like that, then I became more serious or I this or that, but it brought me closer, hopefully that's the point, to the lotus feet of the Lord. And therefore now 10 years after it happened, and I was in total anxiety while it was going on, freaking out, but now I see, oh, that was really good for me. The test or the trick or the art, you could say, I guess the art would be to try to even accept, okay, perhaps I don't understand why this is happening right now. I don't understand what the lesson is that I'm supposed to be learning either, but I can pray for that help. I can pray to the Lord. I can pray to my spiritual master. I can pray to the Prabhupada for that help. Please help me understand these activities, this circumstance is meant to bring me closer to you. And then if you keep your eyes open and your ears open, then gradually Krishna will reveal that to you. He will, through the association of devotees, through life circumstances, through purifying the intelligence gradually, that will be revealed to you. Just like Prabhupada said, the Supreme Lord never forgets his pure devotees. That doesn't mean just Maharaj Parikit and Sukadeva Goswami and those, but it means all of his devotees. Srila Prabhupada would say, you think, oh, that means a pure devotee, and I'm not a pure devotee. Yes, we're not pure devotees. But because Srila Prabhupada has taught us from the day we walked into the temple or started to hear about Krishna, Srila Prabhupada focused us in on Krishna's lotus feet as the goal of our life. So even though we have Krishna's lotus feet and attainment of devotional service to Krishna's lotus feet as the goal of our life, it's totally understandable that we also have other desires surrounding that too, materialistic desires or whatever. But what is our prime goal of life? Our prime goal of life is to make some advancement in this life and to somehow or other, some way or other, some time or other, attain Krishna's lotus feet. So Srila Prabhupada defines that. He defines that one-pointed desire as pure devotion. And he defined that early on in the movement. If I had a better memory, I could remember the year, but maybe it was 1976, because that was the year that Prabhupada had the New York Ratha Yatra. So Srila Prabhupada was in his 12th floor suite on the top of that skyscraper in New York, on the 12th floor. And there was interview by various reporters from various magazines and stuff, and one of the questions was, how many pure devotees are in the movement? And so one would have thought he would say one, but he didn't say one. He turned to Tamal Krishnamaraj and said, how many devotees do we have in our movement? Tamal at the time answered, 5,000. And Prabhupada told the reporter, we have 5,000 pure devotees. And that's quite an amazing statement. But that's what he was basing it on. It's also because of Prabhupada, but because he trained us to be one point, it's not that anyone's thinking, oh yeah, I want to become Indra or, go here or go there. It's all by his mercy, very clearly and repeatedly poking us in on fixing our mind on Krishna's lotus feet. And therefore, that's the predominant feeling. So he goes on to say in the purport, sometimes he creates an awkward situation and the devotee becomes obliged to renounce worldly affairs. Then he says, the devotee can understand by the signal of the Lord, but others take it to be unfavorable and frustrating. So perhaps when different challenges come to us, people will think, oh, that's because of your past sinful activities, Prabhu. You know, and that might be the reason that different circumstances are happening. But because Srila Prabhupada explains in Nectar of Devotion that the difference between a devotee or an aspiring devotee and a materialistic person is that a materialistic person, they're receiving the action and reaction of previous karmic activities just very mechanically through the agency of the modes of material nature, tit for tat, you know. They did XYZ, it gets XYZ for a reaction, they're getting it mixed however. But for a devotee or an aspiring devotee, even a person who just once said, Krishna, I am yours, from this day on, I am yours, just once says that, then Krishna takes charge, or the internal potency. The materialistic person is under the influence of the external potency of the Lord, and the devotee, an aspiring devotee, is under the influence of the internal potency of the Lord, who is personified as Srimati Radharani. That under her direction, devotees' past karmic reactions are custom arranged, so that anything is meant actually to bring us closer and closer to the Lord. So it's a kind of a statement that's easy to say in a class. Oh yeah, everything's by the divine arrangement of the Lord, Prabhu. You know, it's easy to say it. But actually to go through it and experience it when there's some anxiety or trying circumstance in our life, that's another step of, what do you call it, putting your money where your mouth is, I guess you could say, you know, showing your actual understanding of it. But, and sometimes we may be able to approach situations like that in a more philosophical and devotional and accepting mood, and sometimes the circumstance might be so intense or so trying or so devastating that it's very hard to see the kind hand of the Lord in our life. But by practice, everything's done by practice. So if we practice, it we'll be able to achieve that. And if we stay, and that's another plug for staying in the association of devotees. When we can't see it, oftentimes just a little encouraging words from, you know, our associates and our friends to help us see on that, in that light. We might not be able to grasp it and calm the mind and the heart down fully, but still we can aspire for it. We can aspire for it. And that practice of trying to see Krishna's kind hand in our life can happen on a day-to-day basis, especially when there's no extreme challenge. Because if we practice to see Krishna's kind hand in our life, you'll see it. And if you don't practice it, you won't see it. Kind of, yeah. If you practice on a small scale and gradually, just like, you know, what do you call it, weightlifting, you know? You don't start off trying to lift, you know, 100-pound barbells. Or most of us don't, maybe some of you guys do. This side of the room doesn't start off with 100 pounds. You start off with 3-pounders or whatever. But gradually, if that's your desire to build up your muscle. But anyway, to build up our devotional muscle, we practice and we stay in the association of the devotees to the best of our ability. So Prabhupada continues, but I just particularly, it struck me that sentence where Prabhupada says, the devotees can understand by the signal of the Lord, but others take it to be unfavorable and frustrating. You know, And now we can look on this circumstance. It's an interesting thing. Sometimes I think of the different circumstances that are presented in the Bhagavatam. Like, for example, this one is a classic one. Another one is when Maharaj Indradumna was meditating after he had renounced the kingdom, and he was meditating in his ashram. A very similar circumstance came. But this time, this story is about the Maharaj who was meditating, and he was absorbed in meditating, and the sage entered, and the sage was expecting some kind words or some recognition, and he didn't get any recognition, and his reaction was, "You're dull like an elephant. Better you become an elephant in your next life." So if we were there, I often think of that. What would my reaction be if I was there and I had my little cell phone and I took the picture, just as the sage was cursing King Indradumna? Then he would say, "Look at this! It's so unfair! It's so unjust!" There's so many circumstances like that. If you take the picture, you just see that one frame. Or some other circumstances that were there. Oh yeah, Maharaj Ambarish, sorry. Maharaj Ambarish, when Durvasa Muni, again, comes to, disrupt Maharaj Ambarish. And Maharaj Ambarish, if you take the picture there, when Maharaj Ambarish pulls the hair out of his head and makes the demon, took your picture, look what he's doing. Or Chitraketu, that's another one. Chitraketu went through so many austerities to get his son by marrying all those 10 million women. Didn't get a son, finally gets a son, and then the son gets poisoned, and then etc., etc. And you think, oh, look at how unfair it was. And then he gets cursed. Then he gets cursed by Parvati to become Vritrasura. And you think, well, what's going on? There has to be just points that we're trying to make. The point that we're trying to make is that it's often not easy to see right away what the full effect of it or the full import of the circumstance would be. So we need to develop that careful attitude. There's another really interesting story that's mentioned not fully in Nectar of Devotion. In chapter 18 of Nectar of Devotion, something about the ecstatic love. Symptoms of ecstatic love, or characteristics of ecstatic love. We talked about all these levels of bhava bhakti, so high levels of. So under pridelessness, there's just Prabhupada mentions about a wealthy land owner from Calcutta named Lal Babu, and Lal Babu had renounced everything, came to Vrindavan and was begging door to door from the houses of even his political enemies. So that was an example Srila Prabhupada gave of pridelessness. But interestingly enough, Satyananda Maharaj, he tells that story in a more elaborate way. And it's quite a remarkable story. He tells it in one of his classes or seminars or Govardhan retreats perhaps. Talks about how Lal Babu, yes, he was a very pious gentleman and very wealthy at the same time, and he had sponsored or supported a particular temple. And one day he went to that temple, and the pujari there served him some of the Mahaprasada. And unfortunately, while Lal Babu was honoring that Mahaprasada, I think it was dal, whatever, he found a big long hair in the dal. And it infuriated him. What is this? And then when the pujari came, he saw that the pujari had a big long sika. So he just thought, he had contaminated the offering by having a hair fall into the offering. He got so angry at this pujari that he kicked him in the solar plexus, in the chest, and he had shoes on. And the pujari died the next day due to the injuries from that fierce kick in the chest. Whoa. So, you know, talk about, you know, anyway, so his so he was Lal Babu now. His reaction was like he was totally devastated, you know, understanding what have I done, you know, because of my anger. And so and this part, I have to admit, is a little fuzzy in my brain, so you don't have to quote this as exactly what happened, but what I can remember is, so he's like driving, you know, he's either walking or riding around Vrindavan now in a rickshaw, trying to figure out what he should do and how he should atone or what, you know, how to go about life in there. And he just passes by, actually wherever he was, I don't know if it was enough. And he just passes by a little girl who's with her father and they're fishing or doing something, you know. And the father is asleep in the boat. And the little girl's trying to wake up the father and tell him, Pita, it's time to go home now. It's time to go home now. And Lal Babu, just hearing that, time to go home now, that was the signal. That was his signal. Okay, time to go to Vrindavan, renounce everything, and engage fully in devotional service. Just interesting, right? I mean, a terrible circumstance, whatever. His bewilderment, not knowing what to do, how to react, and just hearing the little girl saying to her father, time to go home now. It clicked with him. It clicked with him. Yes, this is what I should do. Time to go home now. Whatever he thought. You know, I've tried to make it in this world and then whatever. Time to go home now. So that's hearing the signal of the Lord. So, it's been stated many times how the super soul, the Lord in the heart, he speaks to his devotees. He's speaking all the time to us. But oftentimes our mind, at least I can say my mind, is speaking much louder than the soft voice of that super soul in the heart. So if we can calm the mind down so that we can hear the voice of the super soul, then we're in a position, in an auspicious position. Anyway, that's a fascinating story to me. So I just wanted to share that with you. So Prabhupada ends the purport when he's talking about how Maharaj Parikshit was destined to be the vehicle that allowed the speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam, and just like his grandfather, Arjuna, was the vehicle that Bhagavad Gita was spoken, and it was for the benefit of everyone. So similarly, even in our lives, we're insignificant personalities, things that happen in our lives are probably not going to affect the whole world. But you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised how people are affected or, affected or impressed or see how we react to things just naturally. See how one leads their life. So it does affect. You know, it might be a smaller group of people. It might not be the whole world, you know, but it might be a small, but people will be seeing that. Whereas others will see these difficult situations as unfavorable and inauspicious, a devotee listening for the signal of the Lord. Anyway, that's the gist of everything there that I'd like to say. And if you'd like to make some comments or corrections or add something personal or whatever, philosophical, now's the time. Sukhita Prabhu. If you just say it, I'll repeat it. We're Mike Lee today.
Thank you, Nanda, for a wonderful, insightful class. And recently, I'm reading about Maharaj Parikshit. And, you know, Prabhupada always comments how we should follow the footsteps of these devotees.
Okay, just let me say. So, in regard to Maharaj Parikshit, Srila Prabhupada always comments how we should follow in the footsteps of the advanced devotees.
And so, and the Prabhupada also comments that by
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Kate.
Reading, you know, just by reading about them and praying to them, that's all in the footsteps.
Yeah.
So that is very inspiring because it's easy to do. It's easy to read about them.
Yeah.
And also ask them for their strength.
Yeah. Thanks. That's a great point. Thanks. And another point similar is that we, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, these literatures, they're living scriptures. We can pray to the personalities and they can hear because they're not limited like we're limited. They can hear and they're empathic or sympathetic anyway to, you know, here we are, just struggling burnt remnants of Kali Yuga, trying to make some progress on the path of devotion. So very, just like Srila Prabhupada says, the father is very kind to his children, but the grandfather is more kind. What to speak of the great sages? But living scriptures there that are anxious that we take advantage of their association. We have,
I was also reading where Prabhupada was talking about the movement and how some people are, you know, they're assisting or they're just cooperating, they're doing a little bit. And Srila Prabhupada says that those people get the exact same benefit as those who are on the front line. So that was also very amazing. Like just working together, just that cooperation creates that auspiciousness for everyone.
And that's there in Bhagavad Gita purport. Bhagavad Gita purport, Srila Prabhupada's listing, just think of me all the time, or Krishna's saying, just think of me all the time, can't do that, do this, you know, giving gradation. And Srila Prabhupada says that if one even can't do anything but is not resentful of the instructions, they also get benefit. Powerful. Thank you. Anyone else or anything else?
Reading the Murugari story yesterday.
Are you speaking loudly into the microphone? Because even with the microphone, you're not here. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I was reading the Murugari story from Sisi yesterday, and that's one point in this context I wanted to mention was that Prabhupada says in the purport, just by the association of the pure devotees, it was so easy for Murugari to accept about his sinful activities in the past. You know, it's not easy usually for one to kind of just say, it's because of my past sins or karma or whatever it is. But I think it's so nice that if we can just kind of go sit in the association of wonderful devotees, somehow it just becomes easier to accept. Mm-hmm. You know, just speaking off the point.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Thanks for saying that. That reminds me of an extra devotion. Fourth, I believe it's the fourth chapter, but I could be wrong. Srila Prabhupada says, when the pure devotee speaks, the Ladini potency, the Samvit and the Ladini, the knowledge and the pleasure potency are injected in his words. And they're injected into the hearts of the audience. And that's how the association of pure devotee is so uplifting and life-changing. Wow. Look it up.
I was going to say, I don't know the verse, Pushkar, but the saffron particles.
Saffron, that's one of his favorite verses. We'll let him say it.
No, I can't say it. I forgot.
Come on, Pushkar, you know it.
Anyway, I don't necessarily believe him, but I can definitely relate to the I forgot part. But I'm sure that doesn't relate to him. Anyway, saffron particles, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's Sri Kumaraj is so good.
But basically, just that those particles, as they come from the lotus,
Kananiba, that's the word.
Thanks. Kananiba.
Yeah.
A lotus particle. Madhu.
If I had my phone, I'd look it up.
It's okay. That's okay. We have your presence. We like
that's
the presence better.
If you forget it, you gotta go look it up.
Yeah.
And if you don't look it up continually, you'll never learn it.
Right. And here's the thing too. This is from Nanda Uvacha, so you can take it or leave it if you want. But even all of those verses that we've not you, all of those verses that we've tried to remember that we haven't been able to remember, somehow or other they're there. and they'll come out in due course of time, just like the Genesis verses came out in due course of time. Here's the verse, this is going to be transported over to you. And then Lada.
She found it.
After all of this, sure. I'll just keep the phone.
Here's the Sanskrit and here's
the... Okay, we'll do the English, okay? Good, I'm thinking I wasn't going to be able to do this. Okay. My dear Lord, you are glorified by selected verses uttered by the great by great personalities. Such glorification of your lotus feet is just like saffron particles. When the transcendental vibration from the mouths of great devotees carries the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet, the forgetful living entity gradually remembers his eternal relationship with you. Devotees thus gradually come to the right conclusion about the value of life. My dear Lord, I therefore do not need any other benediction but the opportunity to hear from the mouth of your pure devotee.
Wow. Thanks for that.
Okay, Madhu.
I was just reading yesterday.
You anyway, forgot
one. Devahuti. Devahuti was talking to Cardinal Mooney before he was leaving her. And so she mentions that, you know, she's talking about her own feelings that I did not take advantage of your association. And there she mentions something to the effect that one gets the association of a pure devotee, even if the person does not have knowledge of that, they still get the benefit of being in the association.
Mm.
So without even knowledge, that's the point that my attention, that even if you don't have any knowledge, the fact that you get the association, you reap the benefit.
Nice, thanks. Thank you very kindly. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavatam ki jai, go premanandi, hari hari.
Madhu, that reminded me of when Srila Prabhupada came to Boston Harbor. A story that I haven't heard very many times. And when he came in on the ship, there was a Coast Guard ship out there, and somebody on the Coast Guard ship was so